obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Afternoon, everybody. I'm Ruth Jagosinski. I'm an alcoholic. Last time I think I was in Laughlin, they still had the all-you-can-eat fried chicken, so that tells you how long ago. And if you don't read the history in your room, if you're staying here, it was a while ago. I have to tell you, thank you very much for inviting me, but I have to tell you, this is a very dangerous room for a speaker meeting. There is no clock that the speaker can see. So 2 o'clock is normally a good nap time. If it's your nap time, I understand. As I look out here, this looks like the nap group, the retired group, the gray group. It looks kind of like what I thought my first meeting when I walked in, except it was all women. It was 300 blue-haired women, and they were all knitting. And I was way too young to belong. So I understand if somebody dozes off and. You know, there's a certain amount that I'm going to say. I don't know how much. A certain amount you're going to listen. If you finish before me, it's okay. I'll tell you a little bit about what I was like and what happened and what it's like now for me. And I was born and raised in New York City of two professional, educated parents who turned out to be alcoholic and died of this disease. And when we read cunning, baffling, and powerful, I always like to add, and potentially fatal, because I have seen a lot of people that is true. My family is 100% alcoholic, not only the two parents who died of it. My sister has a little over 25 years in this program, and I have a son who just celebrated 9 months, hopefully, again, he's been trying for 20 years. And that's up to you people. It's not up to me. I can't help him. I can help others, but I can't help him. I can only watch and keep my mouth shut most of the time, although I do have some scars on my tongue. After I outgrew the fact that I wanted to be a stewardess or a movie star, I decided I really wanted to be a nurse, and that's what I turned out to be, was a nurse. And that's another imperfect gene in our family. My mother was a nurse, I'm a nurse, my sister's a nurse, my daughter was a nurse. So that's the other defective gene in the female side of the family. And I did my training in New York City, and I worked for 45 years as a nurse before I retired about 10 years ago. That's a decision I made as a youngster I never regretted. There were other decisions I made I regretted, but that was not one of them. And I can't say that I was alcoholic for my first drink, because I had many years where alcohol was not a problem for me. As a matter of fact, it was a solution for me for some of my problems until it turned into the problem. And I didn't run with a heavy drinking crowd back in the 50s. I'm a child of the 50s, as I know many people in the room are. The big thing was when you got permission to smoke real cigarettes, that was. And my parents said we could have permission when we were 18. That was like a red light went on. I'll start when I'm 16. And so the stubborn streak was there. And I like to say I was kind of a freeze-dried alcoholic. You had to add enough alcohol before I really blossomed. And it didn't take too long. It was in my early 20s, and I started becoming more and more dependent on alcohol. As a child of the 50s, I did things a little backwards. I became pregnant, and then I got married, and that was not as acceptable as it is today. And so I have a daughter who's 55. It's hard to believe. I think I'm 55. I was 10 when I got sober. And rough relationship with her because she came at a time while I was still in school. Fortunately, my parents took over the last year of my schooling so I could finish, something I'm forever grateful for. But I made some errors in judgment marrying that man, and I was much too immature, and so was he, and that didn't last long at all. The second marriage was, I'm one of those three strikes and you're out people. The second marriage lasted 11 years. It was good. That's where the son comes from. And we just kind of grew apart, but we have a good relationship now. And the third one, I was just barely sober, and I was out to save the world. And this is one that couldn't be saved, but I was going to save him. And so that was another disaster. So the drinking back in the 60s got a little bit more out of control, a little bit more out of control. Married to somebody who didn't have a drinking problem, started to notice. And if you were with somebody who didn't have a drinking problem and they start to comment on it, you do everything you can to not hear those comments again, including hiding it and waiting until you've done the whole week's work and whatever, and then rewarding yourself. And I was a home drinker. I thought I missed a lot of fun because I didn't have the stories that I heard when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought certainly I had been cheated. And so you can see how sick my thinking was. And I also thought, well, it took my mother at least 6 years to lie down on the bed and drink herself to death. How come I'm getting caught before it's even 6 years? So you can tell my thinking wasn't too good back then. I knew I had a problem with alcohol. I had problem accepting that my life was unmanageable because I still had a family, still was employable, lived in a house, had cars or whatever. I was right at the brink of everybody not wanting me around, but of course I ignored that fact. And I thought if you could just drink beer, it would be all right. Okay, I can do that. And so I made a big show during the week of drinking just two beers in the evening and then rewarding myself on the weekends. And pretty soon the weekends turned into Monday and I was calling in sick. And if you have a responsible job, they don't like that too much. And so I had to, back in just before Lent in 1970, I called Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas. I married somebody in the Air Force, and that's how I got to Las Vegas. I've lived in England for 3 years, and I've lived in Georgia, Albany, Georgia, and Little Rock, Arkansas, and then Las Vegas. And it's funny that I should get sober in Las Vegas. My worst drinking was done in Arkansas in a dry county, and I can still remember some of those hectic drives to the next county to the liquor store. And I can remember, I don't know how they cashed some of those checks. That's when you had the old paper checks, and they came back to you so you could read it, and they looked pretty bad. I came out here into Las Vegas, and I knew I could not get sober this Sunday. I knew it was another time when I could not get sober, I was going to have to call in sick. So I called Alcoholics Anonymous. It was listed in the personal columns in the Las Vegas Review Journal. And two nice ladies came to talk to me. Now, I wanted them to know I wasn't as bad as them, so I very arrogantly sent my son for some beer while I was talking to them. I don't know that I'd tolerate that now, but maybe I would. And they promised there were only 28 meetings a week in Las Vegas, and they would, if I could not take a drink for the next 24 hours, they'd take me to a women's meeting the next night. That was a Sunday. There were no Sunday night meetings then. Now you can't walk across the street without finding one. So one of them came and picked me up the next day, and I don't know if you could do it, but back in my early 30s, I could certainly do it. I could still make that heroic effort, get some food in, start to feel better because I was still relatively young. And I thought, oh, I really don't need their help. But they were so nice, I'll go with them. And so I went. And that was where I walked into the room of 300 blue-haired women all knitting. And I was sure it wasn't for me. I thought it was a joining group, and I wasn't a joiner. And so it was a few days before Lent I decided to give it up for Lent. And I don't know, it was a few days before Lent. And as you know, and I certainly did, Lent is 40 days. And if you stop a few days before it starts, my 40 days were up a few days before it ended. And so my Lent was over, and I was off and running. And fortunately, it only took a few more months of really terrible drinking. I don't remember a lot of what they said at those first few meetings that I went to. I went every Monday night during Lent, and that was all I went. And I knew you weren't drinking. That I got. But I didn't hear much else other than that. And I thought somehow I had a magic pill. You had given me a magic elixir in the air, and I could now control my drinking. So I went back out, and it wasn't true. And in a few months, I was in a very sad state, and my employer no longer wanted me, and neither did my husband. And so he gave me the choice of going to the locked ward at the county hospital or to the women's recovery home in Las Vegas, which is where I'd gone to these women's meetings. And that wasn't much of a choice for me. I picked the women's recovery home. I didn't want to be behind any locked doors unless I had the key. And so I went into the recovery home, which is still going. It's in its 55th year. And we don't take any government funds. We do it all fundraising ourselves, old-fashioned recovery home. And I stayed my 30 days. And I want to tell you, when I first went into that home, I was not beaten down enough to listen right away. I was arrogant, and I was ignorant, and I was mad as a wet hen. And I did not want what you had. And very soon, some ladies who had some sobriety, like 15 or 20 years was a lot of sobriety back then, they told me they did not want anything I had, and I could shut up. I don't like to be wrong, so I shut up, and I decided to listen. And I thought, after about 2 weeks there, I gave up fighting. I thought, all right, you obviously have something I don't have. What I'll do is I will do everything you tell me. I will get the sponsor. I'll go to the step meetings. I'll read the big book. Back then, we didn't have the daily reflections. We used the Hazelton one. Read that every morning. I still have it with all the phone numbers I collected in the back of it. I will do all those things, and I will show you it won't work for me. So, as I tell newcomers, here I sit, 43 and a half years later, showing you that it will not work for me. So if you are working with newcomers, you might point that out, if they're arrogant and angry like I was, to at least try it. Try everything that we suggest, and then decide if it doesn't work for them. My favorite step is step 11, because it helped me direct my thinking and ask for just the wisdom to know what I'm supposed to do, not what you're supposed to do, which I was always sure I knew how to help to aim you. And even if you didn't ask, I'd be happy to tell you and the power to carry that out, because sometimes it's something I don't want to do, and I need some extra help to do it. It doesn't mean I always want to do His will. And sometimes that square peg, I'm just sure it's going to fit in the round hole. And it still doesn't. When I was in the We Care house, one of the employees used to start the day with all of us 20 newcomers in the house. She'd come out smiling and ask us, "Is everything in divine order?" Well, I don't know about you, but in my first 30 days, there wasn't much in divine order. But of course, the answer was yes, everything is in divine order. And I have since learned over and over that everything is in divine order. It doesn't necessarily mean I have to agree with it. And for me, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. I can't change you. I can't change a situation. I can't change a good friend who has an illness I can't control, not alcoholism. And so I have to accept and carry on. I have no guarantee. They taught me how to live one day at a time back then, too. And I have no guarantee that I'll be here tomorrow. As far as I know, I don't have a fatal illness other than living. But who knows? There's big trucks out there. Maybe one of them has my name on it tomorrow. What they told me was, if you really want to live 24 hours a day, stop trying to change the past, because you can't. Do not improve your past anymore. It's as good as it's going to get. And I know some people still want to improve their past, but it doesn't work. I haven't heard too many people that do that. Stay in today, because you can't change yesterday. And pretend that you're not going to be here tomorrow. Just get it in your head. You're not going to be here tomorrow. Just how much do you want to worry about what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day or next week? And those kinds of thoughts helped me cut down my brain to the 24 hours I was in. I was also one of those fast, knee-jerk answerers and reactors. And the minute before you finished saying something, I was sure I had the answer for you. And the same lady taught me how to slow down. And the way she taught me was with a deck of cards, not on the internet, a real deck of cards, playing solitaire. And I know everybody in this room knows how to play solitaire. And to do it in slow motion. And she instructed me as to how slow that motion was to be. And I had to concentrate so hard, turning those cards over slowly, that the other thoughts couldn't come in. The committee had to stop. I just had to concentrate on being slow. And I used that trick for many times in the first few years I was sober. The fact that when another AA member sent me into orbit when I had 10 years sobriety, and for somebody who thought they had no anger in them, she said something, and I knew she was wrong. And of course, she pushed a button, and I was going to show her she was wrong, and she wasn't going to budge. Even though I think secretly she knew she was wrong, she wasn't going to budge because I was pushing. And I really got upset about it. And I did things like that. I did that slow motion, slow down, shut up. And now I call it the three S's, and that is smile, step back, either mentally or physically, it doesn't matter, and shut up. And that has saved me a lot from saying things that I may be sorry about. Now, if you ask me for my opinion on something, I'll be glad to give it to you. But I don't as freely give it without being asked anymore. The early in my sobriety, when people with, 3, 4, 5 years, had quite a few sponsees, or at least one or two, and I opened my mouth at a meeting one time, and I said, I've only had one person ever ask me to sponsor them. I don't know why. If you want to find out why, you can ask a question like that of your home group, and they'll be glad to tell you why. And that initiated some changes, too, about how arrogant I was and how I looked like nobody should come close to me and I wasn't inviting. And when I spoke, I sounded like the final, I was giving the final word and nobody would disagree with me. So I had to look at myself. So if you're having trouble in any area, bring it up at your home group and they will be happy to discuss it with you. Hopefully you have a home group so that people in it know you. I'm a great advocate of a home group. Mine is a second edition group in Las Vegas, and I come often enough so they know me well, and they can tell if something's wrong with me, and I can tell if something's wrong with the longtime members there. And that's the advantage of a home group. People get to know you. I go to other meetings too, but that's my home group where I maintain a membership and I vote and I celebrate my anniversaries at in the second edition group.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
So my favorite step is the 11th. My favorite tradition is the third, closely followed by the fifth. And the third tradition says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And it doesn't even say whose desire, does it? It just says it might be your wife, it might be your husband, it might be your boss, it might be the judge, I don't know. Somebody has a desire for you to stop drinking. I had two great advocates in that corner, and they brought that wall up for me. And so that's one of that's my favorite one. You don't even have to want to stop drinking, but somebody in your life wants you to stop. And that doesn't happen with social drinkers. The second favorite one is the the fifth tradition, which tells us why we have groups. And the only reason we have an AA group or meeting or get together is to carry the message to those who still suffer. So when people ask me, is this in AA or not in AA? My answer is, how is it helping you carry the message? If what your group is doing helps carry the message, then it fits in that. And if it isn't, then you might want to question it. Some of my least favorite things that have happened over my 43 and a half years are the fact that now, with the younger people coming along, we all of a sudden started chanting. And after the Lord's Prayer, you know, keep coming back, works if you work it ad nauseum, on and on. And I wonder what message that sends to the newcomer. I wonder how I would have liked that at my first meeting. Would I have thought, geez, this is kind of like a cult? Or how come I feel left out of this? And so I'm not an advocate of that. And when people ask me how come I don't, I tell them I just don't think anything needs to be added after the last prayer, and I don't join in it, and encourage anybody else who might feel like that to do that. Some of the things that helped me get sober: they told me if I was grateful for my sobriety, I owed Alcoholics Anonymous two things. I owed them some money when I was able to contribute, and that was not mandatory. And there were times when I couldn't contribute. And I owed them some time, to some service, so that Alcoholics Anonymous was here for those that came after me, even though they might not know that they need or want it. And so I started as a secretary, a group secretary, at 3.5 months. I thought that was a big deal. They thought I was sober enough instead of 6 months to let me be secretary at 3.5 months. Back then, we had donuts and coffee, so I had to bring the donuts and hear your criticism if I didn't bring the right ones. Then I went on to be intergroup representative. I really think that should have more than a year's sobriety, because some of those intergroup meetings were really rough. People were tearing their hair out, threatening to resign, and it was very shaky back in the 70s in Las Vegas. And then I was a representative for the group, but I kept paying back. I kept trying to pay back what I had gotten from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can tell you, if you have done some of those jobs, you know as well as I do that when you do something like that, or work on a committee that puts on something like this, or carry H&I, or put your name on the 12-step list, if you do those kinds of things, you find that you get more out of it than you're actually giving. Whatever talents I thought I had or might have to do those positions, I found I was the one that really got rewarded by doing it. And to do those positions in Alcoholics Anonymous is different than doing those positions out in the real world, in the professional world, where when you get a title, supposedly, you have some recognition and you might even get written up in the newspaper. We don't do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. We do the jobs because they need to be done. And it's important that the job get done and the message carried, not who does it. And that's why we have rotation after 2 years or 1 year or whatever it is. And occasionally, I know a group has a perpetual GSR who doesn't ever want to rotate, and sure, nobody could do the job like them, and that's true, they couldn't, but they have trouble getting rid of them. And there are a few instances in Alcoholics Anonymous where I have to tell them that really only a good funeral solves some problems. So Maybe your group needs acceptance or something. But sometimes you have to speak up if you want to change things that are going on in your group. So I did those kinds of service things. And I did some things at different levels, at lower levels, as we say, at the bottom part of the triangle, such as serving the Nevada area as their delegate. And then later in the 80s, I was very honored to be chosen as a trustee for our General Service Board and serve 4 years as a trustee. I want to tell you, you see Alcoholics Anonymous at a whole different level. I don't know. When I first got sober, I thought my group was it, and everything that went on there was perfect, and your group didn't know what to do. And then when I got a little broader, I got to see what went on in Las Vegas and then in the Nevada area. And then I got to see what went on in our whole Pacific region. And I learned what other groups, how they handle problems, situations. You know, can somebody bring a gun to the meeting? Oh, how exciting. I never was at one of those meetings. If it's in my house, do I have to let them stay? No, you don't. Things like that. Problems that I didn't have ever have in my home group. And I'm going to tell you two instances that I don't know why my nose is running. There's no nothing blooming in here. When I was serving on AAWS, Alcoholics Anonymous World Service, who does our publishing. And, you know, when people want to use or borrow our steps or traditions, they write in and they ask permission. And most of the time we grant permission as long as they give us credit for it. I mean, we've loaned them to 150 or 60 other fellowships, so certainly we're generous in doing that. And by the way, if you can't find the right fellowship, there's one called Problems Anonymous. I'm sure you can fit in that one. But in any case, we as alcoholics have wonderful active minds. And twice we had requests that I thought it really tickled us as a board. And I always hope the people who send them in are not in the audience when I'm speaking. But if they are, I guess I'll have to make amends afterward. And one of them was they wanted to because people remember songs so well, they wanted to put the steps and traditions to music because we'd remember them better that way. And we said thank you, but we declined that request to duplicate our steps and traditions in a musical fashion. And the other one was they wanted to print them on bed sheets, so it was the first thing you saw when you got up and the last thing you saw at night. And we declined that one, too. Now maybe somebody's done it somewhere, but they don't have our permission. So alcoholics have we have active minds, and sometimes we need a little governor on that mind, or it's a good idea to run a great thought past somebody else before it goes any farther, particularly if you're sponsoring newcomers, or if it's a new thought or a new idea for you, pick somebody who's been around a bit. And it doesn't always have to be somebody with more sobriety. It can be somebody around your sobriety, or at least been around a while, to run that great idea by before you put it into full fashion. The things that I have changed in my life have been me. I didn't change the outside of me that much. I kept the same profession. Kept the same two kids all the way. But what I had to change was my attitude about just who I was and allow other people to be who they are. And, you know, I have met some of the most fantastic people in Alcoholics Anonymous, people that I would not have bumped into unless you happen to be in the medical profession or very few other places. I like dogs a lot. If you belong to a dog group, maybe I would have met you. But I've met people that I wouldn't have met anywhere else. I've been able to travel to all of the areas in the Pacific region and some all over the U.S. and Canada. There isn't a place that I can go where I can't find a meeting or find a phone number and probably somebody I know to call. And I've been the recipient of that, too. Somebody just emailed me this week. Somebody gave me your name. I'm coming to Las Vegas. I just celebrated 30 days sober. I'd like to go to a meeting. And so you get an opportunity that way to help people. I don't know that I'd want to go to Las Vegas with 30 days sobriety, but I got sober there, so that's a different thing. And what I've tried to do sponsor. So I've sponsored a lot of women and men in service. I've been a service sponsor far more than a recovery sponsor. But now I do some recovery sponsorship. I do it mostly with people that have a bit of sobriety. I think the youngest one I have now is 8, and the oldest is 30. So, because they're tough enough, to hear it like I had to hear it, like shut up and listen to what I'm saying, or, you know, either chew that meat and swallow it or spit it out, but don't keep going on it. And that's a little rough for newcomers. And so I have a friend who's much better with newcomers. She has the patience of Job, and she'll sit and talk to them for hours and hours. And that's not what I needed. That's not what I got. So I'm not as good as she is in that area. And I think all of us have different talents, whether it's working with somebody that's new and wet, or whether it's working with somebody that has a little sobriety, somebody that has problems other than alcohol, along with their alcoholism. There's lots of different types of us around to go around. People that like to work on committees, people that don't like to work on committees. Committee work is great if you have what you think is a pretty solid ego. Go for it. Go get on a committee and just see how important one person is on a committee, because you will learn that everybody on the committee thinks they're important, or the majority do, and you learn how to not give in totally, but I learned how to listen to other people's opinions, try out their idea, and you know what? Sometimes it was better than mine. And I used those things at work, too. I used the traditions while I was still working. They work perfectly in a professional setting. To let other people have their say, don't shut them off just because you can't do what they want. Those traditions work very well out in the real world. The daughter that I didn't want when I had her back in the 50s is now a very good friend. She doesn't live in the area anymore, but we were able to mend that relationship that I harmed. I did not her. I made her responsible for things I should have been doing. I abdicated my role as a mother, and I know a lot of women in Alcoholics Anonymous can identify with that. I was fortunate enough. She was 6, 7 years old when my drinking got out of control, so she could start taking over things. Not that she wanted to, I just wasn't present to do it. And my son, like I said, has had his ups and downs with alcohol far longer than I ever did. Looks like he's on the right path, but I know there's no guarantees there. I've had no other marriages other than the last disastrous one. I found I could learn to live with myself 20 years all alone and just loved it. I had no problem. I didn't like living in this skin when I came in. I had to have activity and something going on around me to prove that I was worth something. Now I enjoy time by myself. It doesn't bother me at all. I do have a companion, a partner, but after 20 years, it just was a good match for we're both travel overseas at least once a year, and it was just more convenient to live together and be together, and our backgrounds are very similar, and we just seem to mesh, and so far it's worked out fine 10 years, so it's going well. Different activities. She has different activities than I do. She's an Alcoholics Anonymous, too. She just celebrated 35 years. And I have some activities that she doesn't do. So we have our own lives, but we also come together. And I think, really, our kids are happier that at our age we're living with somebody, so they don't have to worry that we're going to fall down and break a leg or something and nobody will be there. But we're there for each other. Our kids know where we are and who we're with. They know when we travel. They don't have to go to sleep and wonder where Mom is or what she's doing tonight, whether she's out and about. And although if you're a mother, I think you still worry about your kids. You don't ever stop being a mother. But I can't control them any more than I can control anybody but myself. And it's an inside job. AA also stands for altered attitudes. And I think if I hadn't found Alcoholics Anonymous, I probably would have ended up in a mental institution because I would have been a wet brain in my early 30s. I still physically was in pretty good shape. And I can remember a woman who was 34 years old who was in a mental institution for the rest of her life because she was a wet brain. And all she could do was sing one song over and over again. Physically, she looked great. Mentally, there was nothing left, and alcohol did that. We don't get to see that very often because those people are not out in society anymore. But that's what our drug of choice, alcohol, can do for us if we return to it. I can't imagine a reason to drink again. And I know if something came up and I did, it would be nobody's fault but my own. And I don't feel I'm powerful enough to save you from alcoholism or to cause you to drink again either. And if I can't be helpful with somebody, I think the best thing is for me to step out of the way and let somebody come forward and help. So I have right-sized my ego from what it was. I still am very comfortable and confident when I step up to do something, or else I don't do it. I have never been a treasurer. You do not want me as your treasurer. I know that's not one of my strong suits. I don't care to learn it. There's plenty of you out there that do it well. And so I have seen nothing wrong with saying, not for me. No is a complete sentence. It's a hard one for alcoholics to learn to say no, but it is a complete sentence. I want to tell you, I've had a wonderful time being sober. I've enjoyed it. It is a lot of fun. That doesn't mean every day is great and everything goes my way. But if you're not having fun with your sobriety, then you need to try something else with it. Not drinking, but something else with it. But alcoholics who look sad and depressed and like it's a terrible place to be, I almost want to encourage them to try it again, but I won't do that. But you have to have some fun. You have to learn to laugh at yourself. I had to learn to laugh at myself and not take myself so seriously, not make excuses when I'm the one that's wrong. Just say, I'm sorry I was wrong. Make an amends if I need to make an amends. I'm sorry is not an amends. I'm sorry is just I'm sorry. How many times have we said it? If I need to make an amends, then what can I do to make it right for you? And keep my side of the street clean. So basically, I think I could say, and wrap up, so it's a one-cup meeting, as somebody asked me, is this a one-cup or a two-cup? I said, it's a one-cup. You don't drink one day at a time. Keep my side of the street clean and try to give away what I've gotten so freely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ruth. We really appreciate your coming.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.